So one of the probably most painful experiences anyone can ever have is toothache. No, it's injustice. One can tolerate toothache, but injustice, oh, COVID, that's very, very difficult to tolerate when someone does something to us. And we thought it was just not just. That's very difficult to tolerate. So there is a beautiful story in the life of a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was an incarnation of Krishna that was around here just some 500 years ago, so not too long ago. And he had a great devotee by the name of Shivas Thakur. Now, you all just witnessed the kirtan, and Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was known for his kirtans. And first, when he started his kirtan revolution movement, he would do kirtans only in a secluded place. And now you have to understand, the scene here is happening not in the United States of America, but it's happening in Bengal, India. Now, Bengal used to be just one Bengal. Now you have East and West Bengal, or Bengal and Bangladesh. And Bengalis are very much into music, specifically into kirtan. So the news was spreading that Mahaprabhu was holding these amazing kirtans, but these were private events. So everyone wanted to participate. If you were allowed to participate in these kirtans, would mean that you were a big shot. It's like one of those VIP only events. certain people who thought themselves to be VIPs, meaning spiritually very important personalities, felt it was quite unjust that they were not allowed to participate in these kirtans. So some of them expressed this dissatisfaction in nasty ways. And one of the fellows who had his feelings hurt was named Gopal Chappal. So Gopal Chappal wanted to destroy. He wanted to destroy the reputation, the good reputation of Shivas Thakur. Because Shivas Thakur, not only that he was allowed in these events, but these events were held at his house. So Gopal Chappal, considering himself, you know, a local, big, spiritually important VIP, wanted to defame Shivas Thakur. And after all, they say that for a famous person, the worst thing that can happen is infamy. So one day he placed some articles of some kind of religious articles that indicated, these religious articles are traditionally used not in in Krishna consciousness or in other words, by anyone seeing these articles in front of the house of Shivas Thakur would think that Shivas Thakur is actually professing himself, propagating himself as being publicly claiming himself to be one thing, while in his private life he's actually a low-class person, you know, like a ruffian, unqualified, unsophisticated person. So he left that kind of paraphernalia in front of his door. And Shivas Thakur, he got up the next day and he saw this paraphernalia and started claiming justice. No, he didn't. That's the point. He did not. He did not demand justice. He, as a matter of fact, lifted these items and showed them to people. As a matter of fact, back then, traditionally, people trying to be so pure that just by touching these items, one who's considered very sophisticated would take bath. The local townspeople, knowing the character of Shivas Thakur, thought that this is impossible. In other words, his behavior was so exemplary for such a long time that no one would believe that he was actually propagating, showing himself publicly as one person, but in his private life being someone else. That was the extent of that ploy. So Gopal Chappal didn't get too far. But the next thing, very interesting thing that happened to him was he contracted leprosy. Now, leprosy is not a fun thing, and there's two kinds of leprosy. Basically, there's this kind of what should we call them, germs that eat your body away. You know, sometimes when you see a leper, maybe missing a nose or, you know, body looks like melted away. It's just germs eating it. And then there's contagious leprosy and that which is not contagious. Contagious leprosy, if you touch that person, you get it too. And it's a really horrible thing. I mean, you're being eaten alive slowly. So this is what he got. This is what he got. Then later on, he suffered like this for a long time. And the thing is, back then, leprosy was not uncommon in India, as all over the world. So when one would become known to have contagious leprosy, would be ostracized from the civilization because people didn't want this thing to spread. So at best, you could live alone or in a colony of lepers. I mean, you just didn't know what was worse, you know. So he ended up, Gopal Chappal, this offender. He ended up living underneath a tree on the bank of River Ganga. And he lived there for some time, just suffering tremendously. And then one day he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walking by, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now he knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, an incarnation of Krishna. So he felt, here's my chance. There's no thing that a Supreme Personality of Godhead himself cannot do. So he approached him and he asked him to please fix this for him because he was living in a living hell. Hearing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very angry. Said, you have tried to defame a pure devotee. Not only that I will not cure you, but I will have you suffer like this for millions of years. And then he left him in that state. Kind of a very, very difficult punishment. Then later on, Mahaprabhu continued with his pilgrimage. And then on the way back, which was sometime later, he approached him again. So he wasn't cruel. He just wanted to intensify his agony in that situation so that really considers what he had done. So this time around, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that he would help him. And then the cure was that he should go back to Shiva's Thakur and beg for forgiveness. It's so important to get rid of this kind of envious mentality. And which he did. And now the beautiful thing about this is that when he approached Shiva's Thakur, Shiva's Thakur felt he had nothing to forgive. It's okay, it's fine with me. I have nothing to forgive. You're okay. He was, Gopal Chappal, the offender, was exhibiting great deal of humility and bowing down and keeping his palms folded in expressing humility. And Shiva's Thakur felt very uneasy. Oh, please, please, don't be so humble before me. Try to lift him up. Now, this is a very interesting thing because this person wanted to destroy his reputation. If there is a punishment that's really severe, that's what you call that, ostracism, when you get ostracized. Is that the right word, ostracism? Okay. Why do people wear clothing that's appreciated by other people. In other words, wear clothing that's fashionable. Because we want to be accepted by the society. There's hardly anything as painful as being rejected by society. That's why people accept certain kind of lingo. Like, why do all teenagers speak the way they speak? When I was a teenager, they didn't speak like that. It was a different type of a lingo. Because they have to be accepted as cool teenagers. There's nothing as worse as not being a cool teenager. So, Gopal Chapal tried to defame Shiva's Thakur, tried to destroy his social reputation to the point where Shiva's Thakur would have been forced, had Gopal Chapal succeeded, would have been forced to live in a society, in a group of people, in a city where everyone would just despise him or move away. Which back in pre-industrial ages was a very difficult thing to do, to just move away. That's why people previously took birth somewhere and you die there, and like that for generations. Because in pre-industrial era, it was difficult to move. So he really wanted to do a nasty thing to him. Yet, Shiva's Thakur didn't take it as an offense. And will come in a matter of minutes to the point as to why he was in that kind of a frame of mind or consciousness. Now, there is another story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Avanti Brahmin, who, I will just tell the end of the story. Brief synopsis of the story is that Avanti Brahmin, Brahmin means he was a very respectable gentleman in the society, but he was known for being very, miserly. He was such a miser, he would lie and cheat his own mother for profit. As a matter of fact, he would forego his own pleasure for profit. That's when you know you're just acutely a miser. You have and you just want to have it, you don't even enjoy it, you know, you just need to have it. That's a miser. So he was that kind of a miser, and people just hated him for it. But one day, after almost all of his life of miserliness, he had a change of heart. He had a change of heart. He completely turned around. As a matter of fact, his calling, spiritual calling, had him take up the life of renunciation, where he abandoned his wealth and riches and everything and just went to become a mendicant, a traveling mendicant. Going around, the whole possessions were what he wore, and that was about it. And he had his chanting beads and would just go everywhere and just chant and beg some alms for sustenance. And people who knew him from before were thinking, ha ha, this is really funny. Here's our Avanti Brahmin, the miser. So they would do all kinds of things to him. They would insult him in many ways. Like he'd be sitting down, he would show up somewhere. He would sit down and he would just chant. And people would come and take his beads away. You know, ho ho, you think you're some kind of a spiritual person now. Take his beads away and they wouldn't give it back. Or they would give him back and then take him again. Like this, sometimes people become so extreme they would tie him up like an animal and even urinate on him. Spit and urinate on him. He went as far as that. And he just didn't take any offenses. He just let him do it. He felt that he should not take any offense. For the following reason. And this is directly from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the mantra, the prayer that opens up this chapter. or this story, and it goes like this. For one who is meditating on sense gratification, material life, although lacking factual existence, does not go away, just as the unpleasant experiences of a dream do not. So I'll read it again, just in case you missed it. For one who's meditating on sense gratification, material life, although lacking factual existence, does not go away, just as the unpleasant experiences of a dream do not. So the point is that the material or materialistic life, its very purpose is to distract oneself from Krishna, from that which is important, from one's spiritual life, because that's the real life. Material life keeps coming and going. So the purpose of a materialistic life is to distract one away from Krishna. That's what it is. And it does this in two ways. One way is material pleasure, materialistic happiness. Even the thought of materialistic happiness is distracting. Oh, I'll buy a new purse. Woo! Or guys would think, it's probably girls, I don't think guys would get all thrilled about a purse. Guys would get all thrilled about a car. I was never married, but I heard that sometimes wives, they become envious of their husband's cars because husbands tend to sometimes give so much attention to their cars. It's like, hey, what about me? So the idea of material happiness, oh, I'll get a new car, you know, I love the smell of a new car. And this way one gets distracted. And you can think of any material pleasure. Krishna says that one should live material life as a matter of duty. Things that you do as a matter of duty, you don't love, you don't hate. You just do it. That's all. That's the kind of attitude one should have towards material life. So one way of distraction is this material happiness. And the other way of distraction is material distress. And for this reason, Shiva's Thakur did not allow himself. Here we're talking about some serious transcendentalists who do not waver from the spiritual focus even for a split of a second. He did not allow himself to get distracted by the attempts of Gopal Chapal to defame him. And same thing with the Avanti Brahmin. He did not allow himself to be distracted by the so-called wrongdoings of the people around himself. He wasn't thinking, where is my justice now? And I tell you, that's one of the most difficult things to tolerate, injustice, when we're treated in what we considered unjust way. Like someone called you on, I'm trying to think of an offensive term that's not vulgar. Now it is. Help? No. Rascal. Thank you. Prabhupada used that one a lot. You are a rascal. And you think, no, I'm not a rascal, I'm a decent guy. As a matter of fact, I'm a cool guy. Can you tell him to chin elsewhere? Thank you. So, they did not allow themselves to be distracted by this. by these two types of dualities of illusion, whose only purpose, you may think the purpose of, I don't know, happiness is to be happy. No. The purpose of materialistic happiness is distraction from Krishna. That's what it is, period. And same thing for material distress. Therefore, one is taught to practice tolerance. And tolerance is some sort of like a, it's almost like an exercise, you know. Like, you exercise, you get big muscles, you know. You don't exercise, they just remain like this. Not much. So by practicing tolerance for the sake of maintaining focus on Krishna is wanted. Now, the other thing that Avanti Brahmin thought was that ultimately, anyways, these people are not the cause of my suffering. Rather, the cause of my suffering is my own mind. And he stated something which, years ago when I first read this, I could really not understand this. I really pondered it, I just couldn't understand it. It took me a while. But he said that mind is the cause of one's suffering because the mind actuates the functions of the material modes. And I was thinking, what does it mean that the mind factuates the functions of the modes? The mind actuates the functions of the modes of nature. Now, what does this mean? And how's this any kind of an explanation? The thing is that there are three modes of material nature. The subtle material energy is composed of three modes. And these three modes make up material existence. So, here's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita regarding this. Karya karana kartritve hetu prakritir uchyate. Purusha sukha dukha nam bhoktritve hetu uchyate. So, karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti uchyate. That the material energy is the cause, is the reason, is the source, is the cause of all the situations. So all the situations, our own bodies, the floor, the buildings, the piles of matter, hills, streets, I mean, this is all due to matter. Okay. But purusha sukha dukhanam bhoktritve hetu uchyate. But the living entity is said to be the cause of one's own happiness and distress. So, although matter creates all the situations, like the situation of Avanti Brahmin, where he was being tied up like a pig and insulted in horrible ways. So matter creates all these embarrassing situations. I mean, what do you think, getting old is fun? Can't even go to the bathroom alone. And sometimes you just don't make it to the bathroom. It's embarrassing. When the inside of the body shows itself on the outside. We pretend to be pretty while we're young, you know, but just wait for the inside to show up on the outside. Or actually, just don't wash your body for a couple of days. Make sure you don't put any deodorant either. So, it's very embarrassing. So, all these situations are created by matter. However, despite the creation of these situations by matter, matter is not the cause of our happiness or distress. It is ourselves. And that's explained in the next verse of the Bhagavad Gita. How's that so? Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sat sat yoni janmasu. That by the association with the three qualities of matter, we develop particular likes, particular dislikes, particular worldview, particular character, particular way we interact with other people, particular way we interact with objects. particular way we interact with the world, according to these three modes. So, for example, I'm not going to go into all three modes, but open up a Bhagavad Gita and you can read it yourself. So, example, there are three modes, the goodness, the passion, and the ignorance. So, a person who lives in the mode of goodness would be sometimes even spiritually inclined person, a clean person, a good person, intelligent person, smart person. The person in the mode of passion would be a very restless person, you know, always eager for newer and newer things to see, and newer and newer, more and more places to see and experience, and more and more materialistic acquisitions to inquire. That's really bad English. eager for newer and newer material acquisitions, period. That's a good sentence, okay? Fix that. Go back. The person associating with the mode of ignorance would become a lazy, unclean. What's the word for hard to move, slow, inert. Inert person, and on top of it, a violent person. So by associating with these three modes, one becomes one of these things. Now, what's the happiness in the mode of goodness? What's the main characteristic of the happiness in the mode of goodness? It's a lasting happiness. Happiness in the mode of goodness, it's a lasting happiness. It just kind of, it just stays. It's just steady, like real nice and steady. Very even. Just steady happiness, satisfaction. What's the happiness in the mode of passion? Yeah, yeah, but what are its characteristics? Someone said it back here. Spiking, yeah. Spiking. Oh, you said that? Okay. Yeah, yeah, that's what it does. It spikes. Takes you up, and then it throws you down. Oh my God, I'm so miserable. Let everyone on Facebook know quickly. Community, help. Give me some insulin of pride, you know. Oh, you're great, we love you, you're beautiful, you're pretty, you're smart. Okay, now I feel better. Spike up, you know. It's just materialistic stuff, you know. And then again, you know, everybody help. Tell me I'm pretty, I'm strong, I'm beautiful, I'm smart, and that you all love me as I am. That I should not change at all. Then what's the happiness in the mode of ignorance? There's none. There's just steady dissatisfaction, steady suffering, very steady, solid. So in this way, one gets bewildered by these by the experience of material life, and therefore, the Avanti Brahmin did not think these people to be the cause of his own happiness and distress. Because when you live a particular type of existence, you are or you are not living in the sync with Krishna's creation. What do you think? What happens to a part of a machine when it's not in sync with it? Imagine a machine with lots of wheels, and there's one tiny wheel in there. It just doesn't want to spin the way it's supposed to. It just wants to spin the other way. Where's that coming from? Huh? Oh, we have a purse back here.
No one claims.
I said they didn't want me to go over time, so they set the alarm. But I remember that this is a cheap alarm. It usually just beeps, sounds like like a beginning of atomic war or something. That was a pretty one, at least. So what happens to a little part, a wheel within a machine that doesn't want to get in sync with the rest of the machine? It gets destroyed. So that is the point. So for that reason, the Avanti Brahmin or Shiva's Thakur did not want to be distracted, get trapped by the illusory potency. Now, to conclude, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore taught something very important. And he said, Trinad api sunichena taroriva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadaharihi. Trinad api sunich. That one should consider oneself very insignificant. Unlike modern American sense of a need for what do you call that? Self-esteem. Self-esteem is just a lot of pride. But rather, one should consider oneself, you know, humble like a blade of grass, so low, you know, like a blade of grass. Then the other one, which is directly pertinent to today's presentation, one should learn to be tolerant like a tree. Because if one does not have these two things in place, then it will be literally impossible. It will be literally impossible not to succumb to the influence of the illusory potency. Our attention will be taken away from Krishna time and time and time again. As a matter of fact, it will be very difficult to keep any attention on Krishna. Therefore, you know, one should not think oneself very important. As a matter of fact, one should not even think much about oneself. It's better to think about Krishna and about everybody else. So forget about self-esteem. Just don't even think about self. Less you think of self, yourself, the better. And one should learn to be very tolerant. As a matter of fact, tolerant like a tree. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you manage to pull these two off, while chanting Hare Krishna, then your chanting Hare Krishna will be very, very effective. Otherwise, you chant Hare Krishna, and even while chanting Hare Krishna, you're thinking, oh, my liver, my muscle, my ice cream that I have when I come home in the fridge, you know, my purse, my new purse, the smell of my new car. And so on and so forth. Okay, so I'll stop there. Actually, I should say one thing that so no one gets me wrong. So when we are insulted, we really shouldn't bother ourselves with it. The best is just to ignore it, just let it go. It's like a plant that you don't water, it just won't get anywhere. It'll just die out. If you water it with your attention, it just grows. However, if someone else is insulted, especially if a transcendentalist, a devotee, a pure devotee on top of it, is insulted, we should act. Even if insulted just verbally. Because it is for the ultimate benefit, spiritual and material benefit of everyone, to respect God and to respect God's genuine devotees. So it's good for the insulter to learn this, and especially if the offender is doing this in public. So there are times when we should not tolerate insults. Okay, I'll stop there, and if there are any questions or comments, we can entertain them at this time. If there are any at all. Okay, going once. Okay, we have a taker.
I felt like sometimes if somebody insults me and I'm like publicly and I'm in a group of friends, I've had this happen to me once or twice. Although I kind of like, you know, ignored it and I was hurt, but I, you know, kept myself in control. But there was this feeling inside me that others around me would probably say something. And they really didn't. And I'm like, you know, okay, you know.
There go your friends.
Exactly. And then I go home like...
Another reason not to react. You can tell where your friends are at. Yes.
Yeah, no, I was just saying
Okay.
That's part of it. So I go home and I feel like, oh, why was I so nice? I should have said something back, and because nobody else spoke.
No one else spoke up for me. Terrible. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
How far should we go in defending the devotees?
Pretty far. My first reaction, I wasn't even thinking. Yes.
Where do you draw the line?
I would have to have some examples in order to...
You're just verbally offending, but you don't react in no further than being...
Oh, I do. I certainly do. I mean, it's not... just being from personal experience, it's not that I have to get angry, because sometimes people... For the most part, people are decent, at least in public. For the most part, except few animals, you know, which are, you know, just like two-legged animals anyways, you know. But if people are cultured at all, they don't, you know, just insult people like that. So for the most part, if people insult, it's out of ignorance. And then all it takes is just some education, you know. And, but if the insult is like really malicious, then we have several options. Different ways how to react. We certainly should not just tolerate it. But what we should do, first we should consider whether we can change the mind of this person. If we think we can do that, we should. If the person was doing that in public, then we should consider whether we can change the situation in such a way so that public can actually objectively see the situation. If we're not able to do any of these things, then we should block our ears, thinking this person is just out of control, you know. And I don't want to have anything to do with this person, just walk away. Call police. They'll be like, what? Once I called police, there was a woman that came in here. She was drunk. She wanted to take... the Murti, the deity of Srila Prabhupada, their spiritual teacher, off the seat. She wanted to sit on the seat. She thought that she was so important. So I called police. I escorted her out. She was just drunk. She wasn't, I mean, she was very nice with me, you know, but she wanted to sit out there. So I had her come out. And in the meanwhile, I already called police, you know, because I didn't know, you know, what would the outcome be. So they came and they interviewed me about things, anything I could say. And then a little tiny cute bee, you know, started flying around. And this big cub with his heavy boots started to try to stomp this bee. And I was like, hey, I mean, what are you doing? You know, let it be. Oh. Use this in my next rap song. I wasn't planning this. Just let the thing live. And he looked at me such a way that he wanted to arrest me for being a jerk. Those people are so gross, you know. So what can you do? We have a, you know, we have a legal system that. That's just funny, you know. It has nothing to do with justice. The fact is that... Okay, let me turn off this.